great time for Boston music. It was an explosion.
Yeah.
You could go to a club any night in Boston, and there would be one or two great bands on the bill. And it would just, like, you know, be the Cards or Robin Lane or the Nervous Eaters or the Real Kids or La Peste or all kinds of bands, you know, Del Fuego's. It just went on and on and on. And a lot of them did go and get, you know, a deal and stuff like that. And some did suffer the curse of the Boston bands, where basically, you know, labels or management sent them adrift, and or some, there was self-destruction in some bands, as we all know, being in the business. But it was a great time. I mean, there was all these clubs. There was the Rat, there was the Channel, there was the Underground, there was the Club, there was the Paradise, there was Bunratty's. Straight Scott is the only one left from that era, believe it or not.
I have not been to a club since I lived in California for a number of years. I came back and it's a whole different, it's just totally different.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, when you're talking about Boston bands, even while I was working in radio, when I first started working, my first job was at what was then WHGH-TV, and I was not working as in a music director or program director position. But I was still, I mean, I remember the Beacon, you remember the Beacon Street Union?
Oh, yes.
And Orphan, and
the whole Boss Town sound.
The whole Boss Town sound. It was so much fun. And the, what was that club that was, I think it was on Berkeley Street.
Was it the Unicorn?
No.
Or the Psychedelic Supermarket?
Yeah, the Psychedelic Supermarket. And they just, you know, you'd go
in. Tea Party.
The Tea Party. Yeah. That's what I meant. And the Tea Party, you know, you'd have all these weird things on the ceiling that look like petri dishes and all that kind of stuff. I haven't thought about that for years. Oh, my God.
Were you there, Aaron? Were you in the petri dish?
No.
I think me and Beverly are dating ourselves with age.
Yeah, I know. I always try to say no. People ask me how old I am, and I just say,
There's an answer for that. Yes.
Yes. I'm going to use that. Thank you.
I actually, about a week ago, I had gone over to friends of mine, their house, and, you know, somebody asked me, they have 8 kids. So I said,
oh. 8?
Yeah. Very religious.
8 is enough.
And I said, if somebody came up to me and said, who's your favorite niece and nephew? Because we've been friends for long enough that that's... And I said, yes.
good.
Just use the word
good
yes.
Thought.
That's it.
Yeah. Good thought.
You can't go wrong, because even if the one that I was speaking to said to me, I'm your favorite, the answer is yes. So it's just... You don't go wrong with that. Well, that's a heck of a name for a band, too.
Mm.
Oh, it is. A very good one. Very good. You know, and the other thing I want to say, I missed the years. I think I just left just as Aerosmith. I mean, I left in 78, so Aerosmith was just coming along.
Yeah, they were probably a couple albums in by then, yeah.
And
Cars were taken off.
Yeah, Jay Giles.
Jay Giles took a couple albums in, yeah.
But I left then. So when I hear you play some of these bands, I'm so not familiar with them because I left and then I got old.
That's a no.
That's a no.
In probably a few minutes, we're going to have a call from Jenny Tolman from Nashville, and she's going to give us some updates of what's happening with her career and music down in Nashville.
That's a great name for a show.
Yeah. You know what? A friend posted...
What's happening?
Yeah, what's happening?
That's what the show is. That's what's happening.
In fact, a friend of mine posted a song today by the Birds off their Fifth Dimension album, and the song is called What's Happening.
The Birds off the Fifth Dimension album. Now, that's quite a crossover. Because they didn't even sing the same type of music.
The album was called Fifth Dimension.
Oh, well, you know, but the Fifth Dimension was a heck of a group, too.
Yeah.
One of my mother's favorites.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, wasn't there was a It's What's Happening, Baby, was that?
Well, What's Happening was the name of a television show in the 70s.
Right, okay, there you go. That's what
but
I'm thinking of.
We're sitting down and trying to figure out best name for the show, and...
Is that call?
Yeah, exactly. Bear with us for a second.
Hi, Jenny.
It's a great show.
Yeah, I hardly remember though. It's just when you said those.
You remember
words,
Rerun? Rerun was hard to forget.
Right.
He was actually a because that was very big with the why can't I remember the type of dancing? What type of dancing is it?
I didn't
spinning
dance.
Around the street on cardboard or breakdancing.
Breakdancing.
So he was a breakdancer. And so it was a good show. I mean, a lot of great taglines came out of that.
Remember the show Where the Action Is?
Yes.
I remember being in, I was working at a radio station in San Francisco. It was a Music of Your Life station, and actually I loved it. And the Letterman, not the Letterman, the guys who sang 26 Miles Across the Sea came in. Wow. And I was all excited from that. I remembered exactly the
Hello, can you hear us?
Them doing it.
Hello.
Hi, Jenny.
Jenny, can you hear us?
Jenny, can you hear me? Can you
Jenny, can you hear us?
You?
Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Jenny.
Can you see me?
Yes, we got
welcome.
Jenny.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Jenny Toman. She's calling us from Nashville. We're just sitting here talking with Beverly Meyer, used to be a music director on some of the Boston stations. It's great to have you, Jenny.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And tell us what's going on with you right now down there in Nashville.
Yeah, lots is going on in the past couple of weeks. I have just finished up my very first record, so we're just getting all that stuff together and about to roll out my very first single on September 18th. So it's coming up, so we're just getting all the stuff in order that you never think about when you're a singer.
So the single that's coming out, did you write the song?
I did, yeah. Everything on the record I either co-wrote or wrote by myself. So writing definitely one of the big parts of my music.
So why don't you let our audience know a little bit about yourself, how you got into music, what were your inspirations, and what brought you to Nashville?
Yeah, well, I was born and raised in Nashville. My dad is actually from the Boston area, so that's how I have my connections up there. But he actually came down to Nashville to be a singer as well, and so that's how I ended up being born here. And ever since I grew up, I've just been growing up around the country music industry and business. And I remember when I was little, riding home from dance class one day, there was the old Brad Paisley song called We Dance. And I remember I was listening to it, and I just had this realization when I heard the lyrics, because I was like hypnotized by the story. And I told my mom, she was in the front seat, I go, "Mom, I think I love country music because it tells stories. And I love like following the storyline, and it's just so cool." And I had never experienced anything like that, just with pop music or the top 40 that usually you listen to growing up. And so that was kind of the moment where I realized I loved storytelling and I love country music for that reason. And I actually started writing stories from then on and thought that maybe I would be an author. But then at the same time, I had always sang. I loved to sing. I was in choir all the time. I played piano since I was 3. And so I had all of these different elements of songwriting and country music. I just hadn't quite put them together yet. And for my 16th birthday, I got a guitar. And that's kind of when the whole Taylor Swift movement was happening. And I was like, hey, I think I can do this too. So I just put together everything that I had been doing, the singing, the story writing, and the music, the piano playing and guitar playing, and combined it all into this one thing, and it's called country music, and being a country music artist and a singer-songwriter. And it just kind of worked, and I was like, well, this is what I'm meant to do.
That's great.
So ever since then, yeah, just been rolling along.
Yeah, matter of fact, last week my other show, What's Happening, I had Ayla Brown on, who's from up here.
Oh, yeah, I love Ayla.
And
she's awesome.
She was to talk to, and she's doing a lot of gigs up here over the next month or so.
And we had a phone-in interview with Richard Gilbert.
From right. the oh, cool.
Yeah, he's relocated down there in the Nashville area. The Blackstone Valley Singers Centers or something like that. And he's got a couple solo CDs out also.
Well, because he goes by the name the legendary Rich Gilbert.
There you go.
Ah.
Jenny, this is Beverly. I mean, so who are your
How are you?
And who are your inspirations? I mean, when you're home by yourself, who are you listening to?
Well, one of my favorites of all time is Leanne Womack. I love everything about her voice and all of her songs and just how true to country music she is. I love Brandi Clark, Dolly Parton. I love her. I love her. The character that she portrays, but it's also such a meaningful message that she gives out at the same time. Patsy Cline, I've always loved Johnny Cash. So the great storytellers, that's always been my favorite. Growing up, I loved Sarah Evans too, the Restless record. I always listened to that. I love the strong female storytelling characters.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, actually, it's crazy, but I was thinking of Dolly Parton the other day. Maybe I saw her mentioned somewhere. And I had really, honestly, the music I was into was, or where when I was working, was more rock and roll and top 40. And so, I unfortunately for me, I missed a lot of the great country singers because it was... My work was listening to the music that I was, wherever I was working. But when I saw on the internet an a cappella version of Jolene, and it was, I forget the name of the group. I don't know if you know of. Yeah, and they were singing Jolene with Dolly, and it was just, it makes your spine chill. She was, and this was just done recently. She's just, and so the people you're mentioning have definitely, not only were they great, and they epitomized to my novice and my naive sense of country music, they epitomized the true country music genre, as opposed to people who have gone off and been poppy, or they've added rock and roll. And, I remember Garth Brooks for a while. It was almost like Billy Joel, if you know what I mean. are those people that, and that's not a criticism, that's just the way it was. So it seems like you're more geared toward people who are really true country singers.
Definitely geared more towards traditional country, but I love Garth Brooks as well. I think he's one of the greatest storytellers of all time and greatest performers. Even if it's not the waltzes of old country music, I think he epitomized a different form of country, which I think there's always room to grow in every single genre. But sticking to the roots and always honoring where we came from is definitely important to me, and definitely something that I try to do with my music a lot of the time.
And last week we lost the legend too, the great, late, great Glenn Campbell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did a nice tribute to him because he worked with a lot of different people. I mean, he worked with the Wrecking Crew.
It is insane if you actually look back into it. It's sad that it takes somebody passing away for us to look back and realize what all they've done. But yeah, if you look back and read all about who he's worked with and who he grew up around, and just all of that, it is absolutely amazing and so intriguing to have somebody like that. Because, I loved getting to listen to all of his music with all the radio tributes that came out. And I remember listening to his version of Highway Man, because it was originally, he put that out. And listening to it in the car was I just thought, I was like, oh my goodness, this is such, it's such an enlightened song and so aware and so different and spiritual than what people are talking about today. You know, it's kind of, a lot of the stuff is watered down right now. But I think that songs like that, when you hear that, it speaks to your soul and it's just so enlightened and it is eye-opening. And I feel like humans react to that a lot more, you know, and so it's really a shame that he passed away, and that it's a shame that it took that for his music to kind of revive for a couple of weeks, you know, but yeah, he was absolutely amazing.
Well, he actually, there was a, he was with the Royal Philharmonic, and he said that growing up, he went to the movies and saw The Lone Ranger on the screen and heard the William Tell Overture and said, I got to learn how to play that song, which is very fast and an unbelievable tune. And I played it in his honor last week, and it was just so well done and so fast. And then he also, he did dueling banjos with his daughter. You know, it's like, and then, you know, he mentioned the Beach Boys, and he mentioned that, you know, his show, The Good Time Hour. And he said, you know, when I was working with the Wrecking Crew, it was the most fun he had and most enjoyable. Plus, he made the most money there. And he said, you know, he did that before he had his show. And then after the show sort of faded away, he went back and said, will you guys take me back? And so he worked with, geez, everybody. You know, and...
yeah, it's incredible.
Who have you worked with so far, and who would you like to work with in the future?
Oh, my gosh. Well, studio musician-wise, I have been absolutely the luckiest girl in the world. Because, I mean, the studio musicians in Nashville are incredible. I've worked with people that have played for Garth Brooks, played for Sheryl Crow, Emmylou Harris. I mean, all of the amazing legends that that are some of my favorite people. And so I'm definitely spoiled in that region. And that mostly is thanks to my producer, Dave Brainerd, who he produced Brandi Clark's 12 Stories record, which is one of my favorite records of all time. Jamie Johnson, Jared Neiman, Sonny Sweeney's last record he did. So Dave is absolutely a total blessing to be able to work with, because he has such a different approach of making records and really pushes you beyond your limitations and pushes you to explore edges that wouldn't normally be allowed in just a normal, like, this is a commercial country record, this is how it's going to sound, this is what we're going to do. And so I've been very lucky to be able to just explore a lot of different things that I wouldn't normally be able to go to, or thoughts, or just different opinions. And it's so much fun, and the music is so much fun to make with him, because he is so open and you're allowed to do whatever you're called to do, but still call it country music and make it a country record. So he's definitely a huge part of who I've been able to work with. And I don't think I would want to work with another producer after that, because we definitely have a special bond and a special relationship that we've been able to create through this this project that we're just finishing up right now.
Is this your own label, or is this a company label that you are doing this record with?
This is an independent record that we're working on.
Oh, great.
What's the transition? Yeah. What's it like going from, you know, just someone going into, you know, a singer, a songwriter, playing in clubs, and then really releasing a single and you know, all the hope that comes along with that? What's the mindset? What's the transition like?
It's kind of crazy. it's a lot different than what you expect. Because just a few weeks ago, I got to open for Cole Swindell at the Ohio State Fair, which was the biggest show I've ever played. it was a big arena, a 10,000 seat arena, and the audience response was amazing, and just getting to go out and perform for such a huge audience and such a perfect demographic for the music that you're making is an incredible feeling. And to see them react to it, that's the main thing, is that in Nashville, in the small club, sometimes it's hard to see if your music is reacting because you're in Nashville. And of course, I think it's cool because I'm in the middle of it, but if I take it out of Nashville and I play it for these thousands of people, are they going to react to it? And they did, and that was the most exciting part for me, is just being able to interact with them and getting to talk to them afterwards and hearing which of the songs made an impact on them and what were their favorite songs and just all of that stuff, because that's why we do it. And so getting to see that it is a thing that can reach a larger scale audience was really exciting. And so it gives us confidence for the single release that it is going to be able to reach that audience and it is going to react. And so it's definitely an exciting time, and it's kind of crazy because you're just trying to figure out all these different ways to get music out to people as an independent artist, which is a really fun challenge, and it's a fun way to use the creative side of your brain and the business side as well.
I know, how was it, once a year for a week, everybody basically comes out and was it some type of fan fest?
Oh, are you talking about CMA Fest?
Yeah.
Yeah, where all the fans come and get to meet all the, their...
What's it, a meet and greet?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's meet and... Are you guys talking about the CMA Fest in Nashville in the summer?
I think so. I mean, because a lot of the artists down there are there for the fans and get to meet them, talk to them, and, you know...
That's always a really fun time, and it's crazy the amount of people that come to Nashville for it. It's really fun to see how much everybody loves Nashville that comes to it. And it's really cool that this is my hometown where all these artists live and create, and everybody's always so excited to be able to come here and meet their favorite artists. So CMA Fest is definitely one of the most exciting times in Nashville.
What's it like marketing your record? It has to be a record. What's it like marketing your music? It has to be challenging, just because there are so many ways to get it out there. It's not like you go to a radio station anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, it definitely takes a village. I could never do any of this on my own. I'm surrounded by a bunch of people that I love very much, and I'm very blessed to have helping me with all of this and putting all of our brains together to make the most creative and fun and just kind of eye-catching and ear-catching ways to market the music other than just normal ways of doing things. So it's kind of fun. It's a fun little challenge to figure out different ways of doing things, which is what music is all about also.
That's great.
So it's just a different art form, I guess.
Do you think you'll ever be coming up here sometime soon?
Yes, I'm actually going to be up there in September for the Martha's Vineyard Songwriters Festival.
Oh, nice.
So,
nice.
I'll be in Boston September 14th at Loretta's Last Call. And then the rest of the festival is actually in Martha's Vineyard, so we'll be doing some stuff up there also.
Well, let us know when you're here. Maybe we'll have you call in from the festival, and maybe if there's an opportunity to come, because we do the show at two different stations, so if you have an opportunity before you head back, it'll be great.
Yeah, absolutely. We can figure something out.
Yeah. You would like to give us all your contact, if people would like to contact you, all your websites, your Facebooks, your Twitter handles, all that.
Yes, all of that is just at Jenny Tolman, Jenny with a Y, and Tolman has one L. So anywhere you want to look me up, if you just type in Jenny Tolman, I'll pop right up.
Well, we really appreciate your call in today.
And
thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
And congratulations on your new single and your new album. And When does it officially come out?
The single comes out September 18th. So the record does not have a release date yet. That's still in progress.
Well, you have a home here at WMFO and WMWM, and we wish you the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care. Get your rest, okay? Rest up.
Thanks.
You're going to be busy.
Thanks again, Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny. We'll talk in the next month.
Sounds good.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Jenny.
Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. And I think we could probably get our guest here to do a PSA for us.
Would you?
Who's it for?
Public surface.
You want to know something? As long as it's not Cars for Kids.
Okay.
Okay.
No, it's Kids for Cars.
Kids for Cars. Okay. Grill safety. Oh, and this is dedicated to my friend Jeff Janer. Okay. Summer is a super time to cook. So many tasty kinds of foods. Oh, wait. I got to read. Summer is a super time to cook so many tasty kinds of food, including vegetables on an outdoor barbecue. Some of the worst fires ever in Somerville and Medford, as well as other urban areas, have been caused by grills left attended on porches. Always move a grill at least 10 feet away from any building before lighting it. Don't even think about using it on a porch, and never, ever, ever leave a lit or smoldering grill unattended. If you observe smoke coming from a porch or building, call 911. Don't hesitate to call 911. If you see people grilling on a porch, call the fire department. You're not being a cranky neighbor. You're not being a cranky neighbor. Sorry. You're a concerned citizen. This is a public service message from the firefighters of Somerville and WMFO in Medford and Tufts Community Radio. And I want to say something that's really important to know, because a lot of people are now, of course, a lot of our friends are now living in condos. And they think
it's okay. You can't grill inside.
They think, okay, it's okay to grill on their porch. And you can't, because if something happens, boom.
When I've been left unattended, I burst into flames.
Spontaneously.
You can't bring me anywhere.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean... And remember, a firehouse is where the firemen live, not what happens to the building.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
But Jenny was a pleasure.
She's terrific. Since I'm old, I can ask this question. Do you know about how, is she in her 20s? Or?
Yeah, roughly about that, yeah.
I'd say about that.
She was great. Yeah. She was great.
We hope to hear more from her.
Yeah, she has her head on her shoulders, it seems like. That's good.
We really like reaching out, not just to establish acts or some that are already kind of in the groove, but some are just starting to scratch the surface. Mm-hmm. And we've had some people that have come on and been really fantastic and are starting to go in a great direction. I know the business is very hard now because it's do-it-yourself. The major labels are basically gone. There's basically Clear Channel and Sony, but, you know, there's really not too much. So it's a do-it-yourself, and how people achieve that is through a lot of hard work. So it's a different ball game now. You know,
but you know what? The hard work that went into it back when rock and roll and blues and jazz were really becoming mainstream was very similar to today, because you didn't know which way to go and you had to find your own gigs and make sure things happened. And then, of course, things grew out of it. But I think the biggest thing from that then and now is... That wasn't it.
Yeah,
no. Saved by the beep. Collaboration. Right. And getting out there and doing a show and staying for the next act, because you never know what you're going to see, what you're going to hear, where your next great show is going to be and who it's going to be with. I mean, you know, Mike's been in the business for
35 plus years, yeah.
Many years. And you never know who you're going to perform with or who you're going to perform for.
Yeah.
But, of course, you can't become a Dolly Parton or a Glenn Campbell or the Beach Boys unless you start basically in your basement, so to speak, put things together and then get out there and go to open mics and shows and meeting other people. And I would assume when you started in the business, it wasn't much different than that.
No, and you had to, you know, now it's really interesting, though, because I feel like it was more you know, people were more suit and tie then.
Yeah.
Now
they call them suits or corporate. Yeah.
Yeah. Suit and tie then, and there were people. It was almost like you had to. Your image was so important, and they really you really had to be independent. Artists had to be really independent to actually be who they are. They had to, but it seems now. Artists can be themselves, and they a lot of I go down to the subway and I see people, and they have CDs, and they some people are just amazing artists, and they're just there. Mm. Anybody can make, you know. It's like, remember we used to have to go, or you know, God, I'm getting back into the old days, but you go to Revere Beach or somewhere and you'd sit in and you'd make a record, or you'd go to a studio. Now kids are making records. I mean, the kids I work with, they make music on their computers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I was outside of Fenway and even at the at Faneuil Hall, and you hear the people out there playing. I mean, they're playing plastic containers.
I know.
But they sound so fantastic, and getting out there and just supporting them. I mean, because that's the big thing. I mean, local music, getting out there, enjoying it. And, I mean, yes, today the internet is here and YouTube is here. But you know what? Some people will have 100,000 hits and some people will have two.
Right.
And sometimes it's the one that has two. Okay. Good vibrations. It's good vibrations, yeah. Sometimes it's the people who have two hits who haven't been found yet may actually be the stars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, in, what was it, the late 70s, we had MTV. Okay, and MTV was about the music and about the artist and about people meeting the artist. And then it became reality TV, which basically wiped out everything, and VH1, the same thing. But I found they do have classic MTV, and sit there and you watch some of these acts who are just getting into, as you said, video. And because, well, the big step for video here in Boston was out of Framingham, VH1. I'm not VH1, V66.
Yeah.
V66. And that was Arnie Ginsberg and Garabedian. And they were giving people, local people, and giving them their first step in the door. I mean, and a lot of the people who became famous were on there first.
Right. When I was in Berkeley, we had, there was a, I remember there was this man that I worked with. He was a sales, rep at a jazz station, and he started what they called California Music Channel. And it ended up to be the same thing. It was the same thing that's happening now, but it was cable, where they, and it was what John and Arnie were doing, is, you know, playing videos on a cable channel, and you know, another, you know, something. I'm involved with the cable access station in Cambridge, and there are amazing people who come through there.
Oh yeah.
And the thing is, there are people like Jenny. And, you know, we have to, you know, honor their ambition and them wanting to become famous and just get their music out there on a large scale. But then there are people who just, we all know so many people who just play for the love of it, and it doesn't matter if they ever put out a record. They just, you know, I have a friend, Brian Cutler, he's been playing for years, and it's because he feels the... He's a drummer, and he feels it in his blood. He, you know, he's never had a hit record. He never wants to. You know, every once in a while, they put out a CD just because.
Yeah.
Well, but then you have this this influx of major artists who came from one city. And matter of fact, Mike's working on a project about that city.
Malden, Massachusetts.
Really?
Yes, we had the Ames brothers, Ed Ames.
I remember.
Yes, we had Norman Greenbaum.
Spirit in the Sky.
We had Johnny A. We had Extreme. We had Charlie Farron.
Extreme, right.
Oh, yeah. We have tons. We had a band called The Brigands, which I know people personally in that band.
Yeah, I'm looking at one. Yeah.
I'm up to 32 artists. So if I can do this project, it'll be more than 2 hours on, you know, probably grab some night here at WMFO when things are not... kind of on the quiet.
And
but
then I'll bring you into over WM2.
It's so. Not just people that were born, but people who located, you know, people like Daniel Morelia or Jimmy Birmingham of the Real Kids or Kim of the Bristols. It goes on and on and on and on. And I thought, it's like, gee, you know, like Cambridge, like, you know, Brighton, Alston. Basically, a lot of great music came out of here.
Julie Morgan, too. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
You get a lot of people.
So I'm hoping to do that. I'm going to some health stuff, but I'm hoping to pull that off, and it'll be a fun thing.
That's terrific. Are you doing a video or
no? It's just going to be a radio program
audio?
Like we're doing right now.
I love radio. I'm gonna
probably try to find a format where I'm gonna put it on SoundCloud and then put it back on a CD or then break it up into sections or whatever, and probably do like a little bio, like, you know, this is a band that brigaded another band, and you know, there's a lot of interconnection with a lot of the people that came through Malden. I grew up in the 60s. All of a sudden, everybody after the Beatles or even the Beach Boys, we all had guitars. We were playing in our basements, and then we were playing at the Y. And remember the park on 4th July?
Mm-hmm.
Fairway Green?
Yes, yes.
They used to have music. I don't know why that stopped, but that's, yeah, we used to do that. And it was like music was there. There was something magical. I've told people this. People think I'm nuts. When I was a kid, my bedroom was on the third floor of the house, and it looked northwesterly, and it was the two radio antennas up by the Malden Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And
I said,
as a little kid, I go, that's where the magic comes from, right there.
Right.
Yeah.
And now you're in radio.
Yeah. I'm sorry for everybody.
But, you know, I mean, New England has just such a great entertainment value as far as you never know. First of all, you never know who you're going to meet walking down the street. And many of the people that you think are unapproachable aren't. I mean, I met Steven Tyler, and best word I can say is he was a mensch. He was really, and he went out of his way and was just so very, very nice. You know, stage persona is one thing, but when you get to meet somebody in person, they're not always what they are on stage.
And yeah, I think people expect you to be on all the time, being a musician and in the business. And, you know, you're in the backstage, you're just thinking about tying your shoes and make sure your guitar's in tune and, oh, yeah, you know, I have to go to the bathroom before I go on stage, stuff
right.
You know, we're all human. You know, I've had some really great interactions with people, and I know, you know, when I meet my people that I look up, I mean, I have to kind of pace myself because, wow, that's that person, whether it be Joe Perry or whoever I've met. And you got to put in perspective. I mean, I think, you know, you're always afraid that you're going to step over the line because a lot of people can't help themselves and they, you know, they just kind of jump on them, they spring on them, and then they start asking them to do all kinds of stuff, like, you know. But, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, I had Charlie Farron in for 2.5 hours. That's a long time to have him come in. Martin Barr of Jethro Tull. I brought a few of my friends, other DJ friends, to a show that he did. And it was just, like, very nice and very... become great friends with... Paul Nelson, mm-hmm. who was the man behind Johnny Winter. And one of the nicest guys, too, is James Montgomery. And, you know, he will literally take his shirt off for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen them interact with a great up-and-coming artist who was a kid phenom, Tyler Morris. He is outstanding. He's unbelievable. And they don't look at him as a kid. They look at him as a peer. And that's where people miss it. Because don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to interact. And become, you know, you never know, from friends, or maybe they may just take a moment to say something to you. But you never know, they may remember you.
I have a good friend. Back in the 80s, I decided, I needed to take some more guitar lessons, and I answered an ad in the Phoenix, and I went to the Cambridge rehearsal spaces that used to be up in Fresh Pond that are no longer there. And this guy introduced himself. His name was Gary. And ended up being Gary Hoey, and we ended up being really good friends. And he got to try out for Ozzy Osbourne and a bunch of other stuff. But when he didn't get it, he lost out to Zach Wilde. Ozzy turned and goes, "Gary, listen, you're too good to go back to Massachusetts. You need to be here. This is where your career is." Since then, he has dozens of albums out. He owns his own record label. He had his own clotheslines. He tours with all the big persons. He is very, very down to earth. I used to go out to LA and stay in his place in North Hollywood. They're human, I think we need to appreciate them. And sometimes they grow in front of you and they just like children and they become great things.
Well, there's a thread I see going through what you're saying, and that is that you're somehow meeting people on their home turf. So you're talking about doing your project with musicians from Malden. Mm-hmm. Meeting someone where they live is so much different than meeting them somewhere else.
It's their comfort zone.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so it's easy. So you see, I'm from here. I have the same accent. I know the same. We've been to the same clubs. We go to the same. We go to the same restaurants. We eat the same food. We make sure that we don't. Our neighbors don't put their grills on their porch. but it's true. It's just when you meet somebody on there, you have a common ground.
Yeah,
I had that happen. Like I said, with Ayla Brown, because when her father was running and everything, and knew that she was a musician and a singer songwriter, and there was a competition, and I on my What's Happening page I put up a lot of musicians and their events and their shows and everything, and I had put up the about for her, and she had actually won. I think it was yesterday they performed for a major artist up in New Hampshire, and she wrote me back and just wrote thank you, and that was my opening to just send her a Facebook message, and I had her on last week, and it's like, everybody's human, but when starting the business, I know, equipment was different, but people weren't different. They may have tried to be. Who did you work with? Who did you meet? And what inspired you to stay in the business?
When I look back, I was so fortunate. I met some amazing people. And the thing, it was different than what you're talking about, though, because I was working at a major radio stations. These were people who were really making it. They were not people from my backyard. So I mean, I worked with Ken Shelton and Mark Preno and Lisa Carlin, mm-hmm. George Taylor Morris, God rest his soul, and Robert Desiderio, Stephen Capon, Dave Maynard, Carl DeSouza.
Wow. Tops of the
they were amazing, and honestly, I got into radio because I wanted to meet the Beatles. So I met George Harrison at when he had his solo album come out, 33 and a Third, and honest to God, I barely remember it. I was like a pinball machine. I went on tilt because it was my dream came true. I will tell you, someone a lot of people don't remember or has not been in the, really had a few hits, but the nicest and the best conversation I ever had with anybody was Leo Sayer.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was.
Could be dancing.
Yeah, he wrote for some songs for Three Dog Night.
Okay.
I forget. I can hear it in my mind.
Yeah.
But this is when I was living in New York, and he was just a human being.
Yeah.
And it really made me feel like, oh, okay, I really do like this business, because you do meet people. I mean, we can pretend they're all great, but they're not all great.
No.
and you know, I remember meeting Brian Ferry and feeling like, boy, he's a racist. and it was at a time when, you know, quite frankly, there were a lot of drugs going around. We can't gloss over that. And I'm happy to say I escaped that. But that was not, you know, I saw managers passing people whose names, you know, passing them the Coke jar at 10 o'clock in the morning.
They're all writing books about it now.
Yeah, exactly. So, but all of that being said, I just love the music. That's really what it was. I just enjoyed it. And the other thing is, I could wear jeans to work.
There you go. Something's wrong with that.
Yeah, and I didn't have to pretend. I didn't have to be like a secretary, and you know, and nothing wrong with being a secretary, but that was not for me.
Yeah.
And I felt like I went to work and I liked my job.
Yeah.
And I didn't get paid a whole lot of money. I mean, you know, it was even worse for women then than it is now. It was even worse for people of color than it is now. So you just kind of like, you know, you're expected to be happy you have work. But I just didn't care. One of my actually one of my favorite stories I should tell is involves my sister Eleanor, who you know, and Frank's. I was at working at WCOZ, and Frank Zappa was going to come in, and Eleanor loved Frank Zappa, and so I called her and I said, Frank Zappa's going to be here, so if you'd like to come, you can be the person. I'm sorry, I'm laughing at this story. You can be the person who, you know, sits at the front desk, and when he comes in, you can bring him down to meet, you know, the COZ dish jockeys. And she comes in, and she had a huge dog at that time. I think it was a German Shepherd. And she brings her dog with her. And I'm thinking, wait. You're bringing your dog, and you know, nobody batted an eyelash. Yeah. It was Eleanor. She was, you know, she was 6 feet tall. She was, you know, she was Eleanor. She was gorgeous. She had her dog. And Frank Zappa comes in, and Eleanor's there with her dog, meeting Frank Zappa. So it's just, it was great. It was fun. But at a certain point, and I would say it was when I moved to New York City, I just looked at it in a different way. It was like, you know what? I think I'm growing out of this.
Yeah.
It's
more of a grind with less reward.
It just seemed like, unlike, you know, I left home.
Yeah.
So we're going back to that thread about people you're talking about who have become very famous, but they're from here and you have some connection with them. Mm-hmm. The people I was meeting with, I wasn't ever going to have a real connection with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and Aaron were talking earlier before we started the show about the passing of a great person.
A legend, Jerry Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was looking at and thinking about it that it's very ironic that within a week of what would have been the telethon, he passed away. You know,
right.
Because they took it away from him, which was tragic. You know, it was, he made it what it was. People came and gave their time and for a great cause. And, you know, that really was not the way he needed to go. But then again, he was also quite an entertainer. You know, he was with a lot of great people. You know, his best friend for all the years, even though they said they really didn't talk, Dean Martin. And when Frank Sinatra brought him on the telethon and said, okay, guys, and that was just like, you know, three of the top people in entertainment on that stage at the same time, and it was just magic. And then when Dean Martin passed away, I remember that was just around the telethon time, so it was about this time, about 15 years ago, and it's like, but it's how they made us all feel, you know, made us laugh. And he was also quite a singer, too. you know, and an actor, and he was the real absent-minded professor. And you can't take, I'm sorry, but that was his part. Mm-hmm. It isn't, of course, my mind went blank just now.
It didn't go Mel blank, though.
No, it didn't go. No,
no, very no, funny. Very funny, geez. Very funny.
Okay. Eddie Murphy.
Right.
You know, first of all, it was real. You thought what was happening, you know, and, you know, it's nice to take off on it, but, you know, I like sticking with some of the originals. Because it's just not the same without it.
Well, you know, I think, you know, to be fair, I think, I don't know the details of why the show, but the telethon went away, but I think it was reaching, I think because it was on a national scale, it may have been reaching the end of its time. But it did...
It was like 55 years.
Yeah, it did. It was on for a long time. The other thing is that there are telethons now. It inspired other people to do that. I mean, just 2 days ago, the Red Sox station did...
Jimmy
and
Fund.
Nesson did the Jimmy Fund. And it started that... We can do these telethons, and people learned how to perfect it. I don't know if they've perfected it, but they do it in a way that it just they integrated into their programming, so that it was interesting to the people who and again here we go it yeah. was a local it goes back to that thread it was on it brought it down to a local level and I think that he was the only one doing I would think he was the only one doing that at that time mm. something that it was the whole Labor Day weekend, am I correct?
Yes, it was.
Beyond.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was Sunday into Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 21 hours, and Channel 5 carried it here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because you used to be able to go over there and meet the local personalities and have to have a talk with that phone. But and it's not even on, basically. And it was just different. I mean, you saw local people. A late great friend of ours actually brought me into radio, Doug Mascot. Used to get the kits and do the MDA events and, you know, have the parties and everything else. And it meant a lot to him. I know when... he's been gone for 3 years, almost 3.5 years, and Jerry Lewis was taken off the telethon. He just was part of his life and part of all of our lives. To just take it away, it just was very hurtful.
I can't even imagine what it's like to have something like that taken away from you. I mean, what that you put your heart and soul in.
I know.
And of course, you know, his son, great musician in his own right.
I saw him at the surf in Nantasket.
Ooh.
I did.
I know. Yeah, there's a lot of great memories and stuff. But, yeah, it's always tough. A lot of people, I've been involved in projects in my life, and I was a little bit less forceful back in my college days. And we were documenting an art installation, and some people said, well, we don't particularly like that. So I stepped back, and they totally made a total mess out of it. I said, well, here you can take it. And at the last minute before the showing, they're trying to grab other people to make it better. And it was already complete. You know, so you can't please everybody. But I know that feeling when somebody wants to pull, you know, something you've done away from you. I think we've all had those experiences in life.
And I've got something up here. Martin and Lewis, that's Amari. Would you mind coming back?
Oh, I'd love to.
Thank you for
great.
Coming in.
Thank you.
Thank
I mean,
you. This
you know,
is
I know
great.
It was a little limited by the other interview, but
no,
I really appreciate that, and getting insight on the other side But I'd love to have you back, and also like to have you come up to WMWM sometime.
I would love to, and you know, I liked having the other interview because talking, always nice to talk to young people. That's what has become my, now it's my profession, is talking to young people who are starting out and just kind of watch them blossom. It's one of the best things in the world.
Well, we appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's go to Martin and Lewis. Enjoy.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it becomes my pleasure to present Mr. Dean Martin singing his latest capital recording. That's Amore.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's Amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's Amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Bella. Hearts will play, tippy-tippy-tay, tippy-tippy-tay, like a guitarandella. When the stars make you drool, just like a pasta puzzle at Samore. When you walk down a street with a cloud at your feet, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, that's amore. Like a big pizza pie, oh, that's amore. When the stars make you shine like you've had too much wine, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, all at the amore.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Jerry! Hey, boy, anytime I need him. Jerry! Hey! Give me.
You know what you're going to do for me now?
No.
You're going to conduct the band.
What number, Dean?
Do you happen to know what kind of number this is?
No.
Italian.
It figured.
Yeah. There's no tomorrow. You conduct it, huh?
Oh, boy, pretty gumdrop.
Yeah, bet your bottom dollar on that.
Love is a flower that blooms so tender. Of sweet surrender. Love is a moment of life's enchanting. Let's take this moment tonight.
Now it's
So kiss me. And hold me tight. There's no tomorrow. That's just tonight.